And now, fueled by facts and driven by truth, broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now here are your hosts, Carrie Simpson and Ron Gray.
We do have a good show. We've got Glenn Robbins on later this evening to talk about all things election. Lots happening on that front. The polls are showing a major happening, Ron.
Well, yeah. Have you noticed that the Tories have shrunk and the Liberals have shrunk and Jack Layton has just gone zoom?
Yeah, I gave it to you. Or here's another one if you don't have it.
So?
We've named Jack Layton Mr.
Mr. O-O.
Mr. O-O for the Mr. Official Opposition.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. Now, of course.
Well, that's a frightening prospect.
All right. Now, I just want to get the thumbs up. Is this streaming? Do we have sound going out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
You know, we always brag about these brilliant tech guys we have, Ron, but, you know, we may have to revisit all this.
No coffee.
These are the voices that you can't see, people.
Well, here's a story that I haven't seen in any of the downstream media. Vladimir Putin has promised to spend what amounts to the equivalent of 52 billion Canadian dollars to try and get Russia's fertility rate back up where it ought to be so that the... Did you know their population is declining by 700,000 a year?
Well, you know, but are we revisiting this? Didn't France do this? Isn't all these other countries doing this, but for some reason Canada is not jumping on this bandwagon?
Well, Quebec tried it too. France has, they've brought their fertility rate up, but that's because of the large Muslim immigration that they've had from Algeria.
But isn't the government there trying to entice people? Isn't suddenly we're having pro-family commercials? There is a big push.
But it's not working. It's not working. And what Putin is planning to do is not going to work. Because government will build more affordable housing, will promote a healthy lifestyle, and stop the country's brain drain. That's what Putin is saying. Look, you know, if you depend on mother government to do it, it isn't going to happen. Government makes a lousy mother.
Well, yeah, we know that, but there's huge industries that generate great business as a result of that, Ron.
And now, you know, if it looks like Jack Layton is going to be swinging the power in the House of Commons, and it does look that way,
Jack Layton, Mr.
I don't think it'll go that far. I don't think he'll make official opposition. No, but
Let me dream. I want to hear Michael Ignatieff just once say, "Mr. Layton, you're the Mr. Official opposition." You don't think I'm going to get that?
I don't think you're going to get that.
You think I'm going to be deprived?
Listen, that's not a dream. That's a nightmare.
That's a political pout, people.
That's not a dream. That's a nightmare.
Oh, come on. That would be fun. Canada. Politics is a sport.
We've actually seen... No, politics is a disease in Canada. We've seen that once before under Paul Martin. You remember when he brought in a second budget to put into place $5 billion of spending that Jack Layton wanted just to keep his government in power?
Yeah,
he brought in
yeah.
two budgets in the same year.
There you go, getting so real on me.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, people, I understand that we are streaming and we're hopefully going to get thumbs up here in a few minutes that we're going to have our first guest. And then hopefully our speaker is going to work. And I'm getting our first guest is not there yet.
And are we still checking to see whether we're streaming?
We are streaming.
Oh, we are streaming.
I got the thumbs up on the stream.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Okay. So, big happenings tonight in Burnaby, Ron Gray.
Oh, yes, yes. The Burnaby School Board is holding a public meeting about their lunatic policy on diversity, which...
Now, why do you say that, Ron?
Well, because first of all, their policy on diversity doesn't include me, and I don't think it includes you. So I don't like feeling excluded. Yeah, I don't mind being left out of what they're doing, but I don't like being left out of diversity. That's not it's not diversity
yeah,
if it doesn't
diverse.
Include
I think,
everyone.
I think we qualify as diversity. If anybody qualifies as diversity, it's us.
We're diverse.
But you know what's interesting? I did a little bit of research, and we're going to talk about this policy. We're going to be talking about it a lot. Because there's momentum being built here. Now, there is a group of parents tonight as we speak. The Burnaby School District, a board of school trustees, is meeting to discuss this policy. You know, whether there seems to be some conflicting information on whether it's just under the consideration stage or whether it's been approved, depends on what you're reading. The trustees don't even seem to really know when they want their deadlines, because the deadline for vote was supposed to be tonight, but now they've moved it to another date.
Maybe that's why they declined to come on the program.
Well, you know, I'm feeling really hurt about that, because you guess what I found? I found an article in Extra West where the Burnaby School District spoke to Extra West. They gave Extra West an interview.
Oh.
But they won't give LifeSite News an interview. They won't give Roadkill Radio an interview. Something's wrong with this picture.
I presume that our audience knows that Extra West is the Greater Vancouver area's homosexual newspaper. It's the pro-gay voice in the West. So that gives you an idea of where they're going. They're going to talk to the people whom they favor, whose policies they favor, whose policies they plan to inflict on our children.
But, you know, there should be a clue in that, Ron, because if this policy is so wonderful, it should be easy to defend. They shouldn't fear coming on Roadkill Radio. They should be able to put forward an argument. I mean, we're reasonable people. We're logical people. Give us something tangible that has a basis in fairness, tolerance for everybody.
Fact.
Logic, fact, not based in propaganda. And, you know, we might agree with you, but I don't think they can do that. All right, I'm getting the signal now that our guest is online. So, joining us now is Alex Schadenberg, and he's with the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. Busy, busy people, and I'm just getting some feedback here, so I'm hoping that'll correct itself here in a moment. Euthanasia Prevention Coalition has been extremely busy of late. There seems to be a huge push, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Alex, to once again bring this discussion to the forefront of public debate via the courts. Alex Schadenberg, welcome to Roadkill Radio.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It seems that in British Columbia, the euthanasia lobby is pushing the court to try and deal with the issue of euthanasia or assisted suicide, and I have serious problems with that. They keep saying, oh, well, the public debate needs to happen in Canada. Well, if they have their memory so short, they should remember that last year, Bill C-384 was debated and defeated in Parliament by 228-59, which was a bill brought by Bloc Quebecois member of Parliament Francine Lalonde, and that bill would have legalized euthanasia and assisted suicide. So the fact it was defeated by 228-59 would tell you that it was not only debated, it was massively defeated, and that's where our Parliament stands and should be maintained at this point. Further to that, they want to go through the courts, obviously, because they might figure that the court might do something that the regular public or the Canadian government wouldn't dare do, which is legalize euthanasia or assisted suicide.
Yeah.
The funny thing about it is last week, the Farewell Foundation, which is run by this Russell Ogden, went to the courts asking for an ability, or how would you say, standing, so they could challenge Section 241 of the Criminal Code, which is our Assisted Suicide Act. I don't know if they were granted standing. It appears that they probably weren't, but they were seeking direction from the court as to how to go ahead. And now this week, now we see that the BC Civil Liberties Association, which is, you know, a bunch of nice people, they've decided that they're going to also try now to strike down Section 241 of the Criminal Code, of course, the Assisted Suicide Act. Because the plaintiff in the case that the Farewell Foundation was working with is the same plaintiff and also a friend of Russell Ogden's who runs the Farewell Foundation. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that, in fact, both cases are like Plan A and Plan B. And because Plan A didn't work, they're going to Plan B, which is working with the Civil Liberties Association. That's what I'm assuming, but I don't really know. I'm not part of their conversations or their meetings.
You can see Alex Schoenberg, Ron Gray here, Alex.
Hi, Ron. Yes.
Yeah, you can see how the protest people and the Bloc work so very well and so very closely together because they both have the same operating philosophy. Yes means yes. No means wrong answer. Try again.
Yeah, that's how it seems.
And again, and again.
Well, and democracy, if you don't get what you want, then you go use the courts who have seem to be just this wonderful talent for making law instead of just interpreting it.
And who despise democracy. Yes.
So let's look at the lies in this case. The first thing is the media contacted me today and said, well, what do you think what they're asking for is to have a right to die? And I said, well, wait a second here. This is not about a right to die. There's nothing in the law, whether you like this or not, there's nothing in the law that denies you the ability to cause your own death. The law doesn't allow somebody else to cause your death, and it doesn't allow somebody else to be involved with causing your death. So it doesn't allow euthanasia, which is a form of homicide. And it doesn't allow assisted suicide, is when you actually assist somebody to kill themselves or you urge them to or you... So it doesn't allow somebody else's involvement in causing death. So it's not about a right to die, it's about the right to protect vulnerable people. That's what the law is designed to do, to protect vulnerable people. So let's get this straight. And then the second thing is they say, oh, you know, well, they're saying that with effective safeguards... Oh, we could have a law in Canada and no vulnerable people would ever be threatened by this. And I said to them, well, then why are they going to the courts? Because the court doesn't decide safeguards. If Parliament were to legalize this, which of course would be a crazy idea to do, Parliament could determine how the rules would be followed. The court doesn't do that. The court just says the law is acceptable or the law is not acceptable. So if the law is struck down, it would be the same thing as other laws which were just struck down. Suddenly we would have wide open access in Canada to an act of killing. That's exactly what we would get. So obviously it's got nothing to do with safeguards. It has everything to do, though, with a philosophy of life which says that certain lives are not worth living.
It's interesting, Alex, that the BC Civil Liberties Association has cited the Netherlands as an example of where safeguards are in place, when we know, in fact, that in the Netherlands, those safeguards are routinely ignored. In fact, the last report I saw, which was last year, out of the Netherlands, said that of about 2,500 people who are killed under the law that permits it in the Netherlands, more than half were non-consensual. That means the victim, it wasn't at the victim's behest. Some doctor decided that their life was not worth living and just offed them.
Well, the stats actually show that, the most recent stats show that there were 550 deaths. There's an average of about 550 deaths in the Netherlands without request or consent, and there's about 2,600 euthanasia deaths. And you have to look at this. The Dutch are very, ordered in how they make their laws work. Therefore, that 2,600 of euthanasia deaths does not include the other 550. The 550 are a whole other number. So you have to start doing addition. You have to add it up. The other thing is assisted suicide deaths go on top of those numbers, too. So the actual numbers start getting very large. But the most recent studies that are very important came out of Belgium. And the reason these were important studies were because when Belgium legalized euthanasia in 2003, when they were debating it in 2002, they dealt with the whole Dutch problem of deaths without consent that had been shown through these different government reports. And they said, oh, well, we won't do that in Belgium. That's what they said. Well, we won't do that in Belgium. And they've been putting out government reports every year showing that there aren't any problems in Belgium. So now independent groups have gone in and done these studies, and they have shown that 32% of all euthanasia deaths in Belgium are done without request or consent, which is a massive, massive number, 32%. And only 52% of all euthanasia deaths are actually reported, 52%. So the Netherlands shows that approximately 20% are not reported. But in Belgium, it shows 47% are not reported. It's just incredible. So if you consider it further, well, it's very easy to say that there's nothing going on wrong where they're not reporting it anyway. Yeah. How do you know? You don't know anything then. On top of it, when even the reports, who writes the report? Who sends in the report? When a report is sent in, it's sent in by the doctor who does the euthanasia death. Hmm. So are these reports objective?
Well, obviously not, Alex. And,
no.
And, you know, it's interesting because you reminded me of a conversation I heard on CKNW earlier this week with Art Hister, who is the medical doctor expert for CKNW. And I'm going to actually pull the clip because it's very disturbing, because what Mr. Hister, or Dr. Hister, was going on about was the cost of health care and that we can no longer afford to give people all the drugs that they want in order to keep them alive. And some very important decisions are going to have to be made about who gets, you know, these kinds of life-saving drugs. And he was very clear in his commentary that, you know, the solution to this is probably going to be that some people are going to have to die as a result of it.
Well, that's why we are right now involved in another court case, which is the Rizzulli case in Ontario. Now, Rizzulli is a case where this man is a Muslim family, and he had surgery. He had a hospital infection, and from his hospital infection, he went into coma. And then the hospital decided to remove his ventilator, and his wife said no. His wife was also a doctor on top of it. She said, no, you're not removing his ventilator. We believe that that is wrong to remove that ventilator. Now, whether you agree or not whether it's wrong to remove the ventilator, this is the people who hold that religious point of view, and they should be respected. So what then they did is they went to the court. And the court said that the doctor must receive consent, must have consent to remove the ventilator. So what's now going on is the doctors have appealed the decision. It's the doctors who are appealing the decision, and they are saying, we're appealing the decision because we believe we do not require consent to withdraw medical treatment. Now, that's huge. Now, we've gotten involved in the case because we recognize that is a massive statement. If they get their way on that, then it's not only ventilators. Ventilators are one issue, which is bad enough, but we're also talking about food and fluids.
Mm-hmm.
You could be dehydrated to death because you're in a coma or a semi-coma state. You could be denied antibiotics because maybe you have Alzheimer's and now you have pneumonia. So they've decided that, well, why give you antibiotics? They can withdraw that. They can withhold that. If they win, they can then move very quickly. And further to that, well, then if they can do that, why wouldn't you legalize euthanasia?
Well, and
they've given them almost everything already. You're saying that they can just basically go ahead anyway. You might as well also give them euthanasia, and you'll see that society will say, yeah, well, they're doing this already.
Well, we have to add one more little scenario to your list there, Alex, and that is if your baby needs a tracheotomy so that you can make him
the baby
home.
Joseph case, absolutely, who is now home. He is now home, breathing on his own without any ventilator support. He's breathing on his own.
Much to the doctor's chagrin in Canada, I guess.
And cared for by his parents without any need of medical assistance.
That brings up a point in the first problem with the BC Civil Liberties Association's case statement, in which they talk about people who are incurably ill. And the question is, who is competent to define whether the illness is incurable or cannot be remedied?
Absolutely. And are they always right? But even second to that, many people live with chronic conditions. Many people live with terminal conditions. And many people live in these conditions and live good lives. They might be dying eventually, but they're living until they die, and they're living a good life, and they don't want to die. Well, the question is, why does somebody else wish to die? The question isn't how should society kill them. The question really is why do these people sometimes ask to die? Is there something that we're not doing for them? Or is there a lack of care in our society? Or do we already impose upon people this lack of dignity in these conditions? Are we forcing this upon them, this feeling upon them? And I'm thinking that in our society we've now said that unless you're able to do certain things, unless you're able to work, or unless you're able to be a certain health condition, you're not valued anymore.
Well, it's interesting that you raise that, because we did talk about this, and ironically, the people that we talked about it with was the BC Civil Liberties Association, because Roadkill Radio is very concerned about data collection, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Alex. Here in British Columbia, they're moving to a central database for all of us citizens, including our health records and all the rest of it, where they're going to be able to track you know, our problems, how many times we go to the doctor or to the dentist or to all the various agencies, because they're going to have this central collection of data now. Now, going along the lines of what you're saying and going back to what Ron said, because what my antennas went up when you said an incurable disease. Are we going to redefine the term incurable to we don't want to spend that kind of money to keep you alive?
Right.
It's incurable now because we're going to deny you insulin for your diabetes because you ate too much junk food, you know. These are all very real possibilities if we go down this road.
Yes, but how do you define terminal illness? Because if you don't, you know, the fact is that when you look at a lot of these bills that are looking to legalize euthanasia and assisted suicide or these legislative initiatives that have gone through, how they define terminal illness would mean if you are insulin dependent and you decide to stop taking insulin, well, that would make you terminally ill.
Hmm.
Then you would qualify for euthanasia.
Life is a terminal illness. The death rate is still one per person. But
that's
listen,
right.
Alex, I want to go back to a point that you made earlier. Just because we were talking pretty rapidly at the time, and I don't want this to go unnoticed, you made the point that if this court case results in the law being struck down, it will be an open field day for anyone to kill anyone and say, I did it because I thought they were suffering.
Well, they're actually trying to strike down the Assisted Suicide Act. So let's clearly understand what that is. The Assisted Suicide Act says you're not allowed to aid, so you're not allowed to actually provide the means or be involved in somebody killing themselves. You're not allowed to aid them, so you can't give somebody a gun. You're not allowed to abet them, that means encourage them, or you're not allowed to counsel them. So if someone is suicidal, the law says you're not allowed to counsel them, to encourage them to kill themselves. So if that were struck down, what would it mean? It would mean that teenagers, it would mean that elderly people or anybody who is suicidal for whatever reason, we wouldn't be able to, we could be involved with helping them kill themselves. We could say, well, you know, I agree, and we can be involved with making that happen. Well, let's consider this. Why do people consider suicide? Is it because they're terminally ill? Well, no, that's actually only a very minor number of cases. It's for many reasons that people consider it. It's because they're feeling, you know, they're going through a mental breakdown or mental illness. They're going through a very difficult time in their life. They have chronic conditions. They feel rejected. Their husband divorced them or whatever. Many reasons.
Yeah.
The law is there to protect people. The law was designed to protect people from other citizens. And sometimes that's necessary.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking of, you know, some scenarios where people would have an interest in encouraging somebody to jump off a bridge. And what immediately comes to mind is the circus around any time a perceived gay student, you know, gets successfully kills themselves. Even though yeah. we ignore all the rest of the suicides that outnumber these, but for whatever reason, and I also know the propaganda attached to that would almost feed on this kind of thing. You know, if we can just get another jumper, it's going to put us back on the front page. You know,
what about elder abuse, though?
Mm, exactly.
Elder abuse, let's consider this. Elder abuse has become a significant issue in our culture because we've identified that with an aging population, that like child abuse, there is a huge number of elderly people who are finding themselves abused. They're financially abused, sexually abused, physically abused, but also there are cases, just go through the Google and look it up, you'll see there are lots of cases of homicide. Now let's consider if there were no laws preventing assisted suicide, how when somebody is dependent, see, elder abuse happens because, A, the elderly person doesn't report it. Why don't they report it? They're dependent on the person who's doing it to them, because 70% of the time, elder abuse is done by family members or friends. So these are people who are dependent on a family member who's now abusing them, taking their money or physically abusing them or even causing their death. So let's put this into perspective. You know, we're talking about assisted suicide of often elderly people, and you're saying, did mom actually want to die? Let's think about how this law actually is today. The law protects people. It becomes a new form of elder abuse if you can legalize assisted suicide.
Well, you've got my mind going on this. What about an elderly individual that will be giving away a large inheritance. I mean,
yeah,
the
mom's got too much money, and she doesn't seem to die, and she's got early stage dementia anyway.
Yeah.
She seems to have another 10 good years left in her, but she seems to be losing it. Why don't we just help her out a bit?
Yeah, and we could, you know, the quality of life versus quantity. Come on, you know, this is, you know, all, you change the whole dynamic, don't you, when you take away the sanctity of life?
Absolutely, and I'm sorry to say this, that more often than not, it is mom that gets that goes through elder abuse, and I think it's terrible how our attitudes have become so negative towards older people within our culture. And I know Ron Gray hasn't experienced that, but many others do.
You know, actually, I saw a special with Mickey Rooney.
Absolutely. Mickey Rooney's now speaking out.
Yeah, and I was moved. I sat there riveted to the television because I was, number one, shocked at his story. I was moved by his willingness to come out, because I think you're right. You know, this is a dark secret that, you know, the nation's dirty little secret. We don't want to talk about this. If we talk about it, we have to deal with it. But this whole euthanasia issue, and part of there's a part of me that's rising up, getting really pissed off, for lack of better descript, Alex Schanberg, that my tax dollars are even entertaining this in the courts right now. Haven't we sent a very loud and clear message on this subject?
I think no matter what, if it's going to be debated, it has to be debated in Parliament. Secondly, there's a big question here. Why does the BC Civil Liberties Association believe they should have standing in such a case? What makes them have standing in such a case so that the courts would have to deal with such an issue that is of national significance based on their lawsuit or complaint? Based on a couple who took their mother to Switzerland, I don't understand. Like I think that the only real just thing that could happen here is that the Attorney General of Canada says to the court, throw this case out. There's no standing here, and this is not a case that the court should ever be touching anyway.
Well, you know what? I'm almost intrigued by this, Alex. Maybe Roadkill should set up a debate between you and the BC Civil Liberties Association, and we'll broadcast it, and people can get firsthand information about why they are involved in this case.
I'm fair game with that one.
I figured,
since I asked the question, why do they think that they should be able to impose changing a law upon all of Canadians based on two people who took their mother to Switzerland to eat chocolate and die by assisted suicide? If you read the story, you understand why I said eat chocolate.
Well, no, and you know what, though, Alex? I am going to extend that invitation. I know you're going to be out here in the very near future, and this isn't going to go away as it weaves its way through the courts.
I'm fair game. Yeah, you know I'm going to be down in May, and I'm going to be down again in June. I'm going to be down twice. In mid-May, I'm speaking at the March for Life dinner in Victoria, B.C., and, of course, in June is our conference. And I'm more than happy to go fully debating them in public or in private or anywhere.
Oh, no.
On top of it, I'm sure our legal counsel, Hugh Scherer, would love to do that, too, if they didn't want to talk to me.
Well, let it be public.
Well, let's bring a couple on, then. Let's, you know what, we're going to organize this, Alex. I think, because, you know why? For this one reason, I am pissed off because my tax dollars go to supporting the BC Civil Liberties Association because they get tax money. And I don't like that. And my court, I have to pay every time those court doors open. Not to mention the fact that we've wasted a huge amount of time already in Parliament taking up this issue, sending a very loud and clear message on this issue. So enough it with this. You know, let's just deal with this as mature people. Let's have an all-out debate, never in private. This is Roadkill. We don't do anything in private here. It's called exposure.
And let's be brutally honest, no matter who wins this next election, there will be another bill in Parliament again. It will be debated in Parliament again, whether it be brought forward by one of the Bloc members or one of the NDP members or one of the Liberals. It will be brought forward again, and it will be debated again. So this is not just something, but once again, why do the courts, where does the BC Civil Liberties Association believe that they have the right to do this to us? This is ridiculous. They're imposing this on us. This is not about freedom. They're lying when it's about freedom. If you want to kill yourself, I don't believe that that's a great idea. I will always say, that's a terrible idea. Don't be doing that. What's wrong? Let's talk about what your problems are. But there's no law stopping you from killing yourself. That's not a good idea, but there is no law. There is a law stopping me from killing you. And
okay.
That's what this is about.
Let's go back on this issue, Alex, because what was the Sue Rodriguez case about? Because that caused...
Assisted suicide, yes. That was exactly the same case as they're trying to bring forward again.
Yeah. Well, so the court... Now, in this particular case, then, are you going to be taking intervener status in this?
We're seeking it, but we're waiting at the moment because it is possible that the court will not even grant status to the BC Liberty Civil Liberties Association, and the case will be dropped.
Okay.
I don't even see how they have a case, to tell you the truth. To me, this is a legal mumbo-jumbo that they're playing right now.
So,
but if they are granted standing, then we will be intervening, absolutely.
Okay, so let me get the court scene in my mind straight here, and that for our viewers here. Is the Attorney General of Canada involved in this case?
Well, that's who's being challenged, yes. So
okay.
It is the Attorney General of Canada who will have to assign lawyers to handle the case, yes.
So, and what the Attorney General of Canada will do then is defend the law, and hopefully, do you have confidence in the lawyers from the Attorney General of Canada's office?
I don't know, but I do know that in the case of the Bill C-384 debate, that the Attorney General of Canada made very good arguments. The Attorney General's office made very good arguments as to why this bill should be rejected, that bill should be rejected. So I think that they're on the right direction, so...
Okay.
Alex, there's two bits of linguistic trickery that I'd like to get you to address. One is the question of quality of life. Like, you know, under Kay Carter's circumstances, as described by her family, you know, Stephen Hawking's life would not be considered worth living, and yet he's still functioning and seems to be pretty happy doing it. The other one is the question of dignity. And, you know, that... They're saying that to be allowed to have someone kill you comfortably is dignity, whereas I have always thought that dignity is in how you approach life or death, but not in escaping its problems. Let me hear your comments on that.
Well, we might as well deal with dignity first. I don't see how you gain dignity just because you have a lethal dose flowing through your bloodstream. I don't know how that granted you dignity. I think dignity is more based upon how you treat others and how others treat you, mm-hmm. how we care about each other within society. The fact is that in this case, it is a reality that Kay was going through a difficult situation. And there was just no question about it. But, you know, if we were to say in society, oh, well, then euthanasia or assisted suicide, that's acceptable for those cases. Well, there's lots of people going in through those similar situations in our society. Are we then saying that for everybody this should now be an option? And if it is an option for everybody, what are we actually saying about these people, that their lives are not worth living? Now, Kay might have said, well, wait a second, I don't want to live that way. Well, that is a question that we need to answer to society. How can we help out Kay so that her life has dignity even when it's in a very difficult circumstance? Because many people live through similar circumstances and also find great dignity in their life, whereas others think that they lack dignity in those same situations. Well, what is it about the one person that is different than the other? And what is it about how we're caring for the one person that doesn't seem to be happening for the other? You know, you have to ask the question. We can understand when someone's going through a very horrific time that they may say, I don't want to live anymore. So we can understand that. The question is why? And then what can we do for that person to enable them to feel that they can live until they've died, rather than that we have to kill them to end their life, that we can actually give them the opportunity to live until they die. Like, this is how we have to look at it. Now, the other question you asked me, what was it about? It was about the dignity thing. Well, the dignity, she was going through great pain and suffering. So, yes, so we can accept that. We can understand that. But once again, Is she alone within our whole country going through that? And the answer was no, she was not alone. Many people go through that. And so do we need to be challenged as a society to provide better care? And the answer is absolutely yes, mm-hmm. without a question. People should not feel that their life is not worth living. We as a society should be walking with people as they approach those final days and seek that their life has a level of dignity till the end. If we don't, then we're in a situation where we're truly not offering true compassion and dignity to anybody.
Alex, are we at a point in our society, and I want to touch on two different subject matters with this, okay? Going to what you were just discussing about the compassion of our civil society, if that is in existence, are we running into a problem as a result of the directions we have taken? And what comes to mind is my generation and many of my friends who just dump their kids at daycare. You know, that was their preference at all. It was about them to go get their career, to do their jobs, not take care of the nurturing aspects or the empathy aspects or the caring aspects of raising children and all those things that are, you know, given to them in their formative years. Is this mentality now, and I'm going to say this too, for judges on the bench, especially women judges, and I can say this because I'm a woman, you know, that sacrificed everything that makes them a woman, number one being maternal and all those instincts that kick in with that, to do a practical thing of sitting on the bench, whether it be for career or money or what they presume to be prestige. Are we running into a lot of different issues that are factoring into this perception? And I want to use the word perception because I think there's the we should be doing this versus what our hearts usually say. And, you know, now when I talk to my friends, if they could do it over again, they would have stayed home with every one of their kids, you know?
Okay, these are all very difficult questions because we're dealing with people and decisions they've made, but do they always connect? Sometimes these issues do connect. The fact is that we in society have first said that, they talk about freedom, but the freedom they're actually talking about is not a freedom at all. It's actually an imposing of a cultural belief upon others. So if I were a person with a disability, as the prime example, I would be very concerned living in this culture because this culture has become all about the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm a person with a disability and I have specific needs and I'm, how would you say, a little bit dependent on others at times because of the reality of how I am, which should be no problem. I'm just a different person how I am. It's okay. It's just as we are. We should all fit in within society. The fact is I would feel that maybe society looks at me differently because people in general, want it to all be about themselves. So what's happened is we're now imposing this on others. So they say, oh, well, assisted suicide or euthanasia is about freedom. It's not about freedom. That's a lie. When did it become a freedom when someone sticks a needle in my arm and fills my bloodstream with a lethal dose? When was that freedom? It's never been freedom. In Nazi Germany, what would they have called it? It's about imposing. And if you're too stupid, this is what the end result. If you're too stupid to not accept that, if you're too stupid to not accept that early death by lethal dose, it'll be imposed on you.
Mm.
That's exactly how it will happen. Because your life will not be worth living. And if you're too stupid not to have figured that out, society will make that decision for you.
That brings
in Belgium. Why in Belgium are there so many deaths without consent? And the reason was, like, the study looked at that question, and it found out very clearly, well, what do we do with the bed blockers? The people who might be dying or who have significant conditions, but they're not dying. They didn't ask for death, but they're not dying. So what do we do about them? Well, the best thing to do about them is just to end their life, and no one knows different anyway. No one knows different.
Alex,
they're gone.
I want to raise the other point that I was talking about, and we were talking about this before the show. And is there another problem that's associated with this psychology that, you know, if mother government says it's okay for someone to help me commit suicide, then I can feel better about it because mother government's allowing me to do this?
That's right. It all makes it better now. It's fine now because someone said, it's now legal. Now we can do this. Now remember, what is euthanasia? Euthanasia is a form of homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have to think this through very clearly. Do you actually want somebody to be able to be involved with causing your death? I can understand the reasons why someone might say, I don't want to live that way. There's another way to handle those problems, but nonetheless, I can understand people saying that. But to legalize, because what you're doing is you're actually giving the right to the physician to cause your death. That's what it's actually doing. To legalize that, that creates a problem for everybody.
That brings us
every
back
single
to,
person is not safe anymore.
That brings us back to a point that you made earlier, that the primary function of law, of the rule of law in a civilized society, is to protect people from other people.
Whether we like it or not, that's exactly it.
Yeah. And this is taking away a protection.
That's right. It is taking away protection. They say it's about taking away their freedom, but it doesn't actually remove their freedom at all. What it's done is it's removed a protection. If it were taking away, if there were a law saying that you can't actually kill yourself like there had been in the past, that would then mean that the law is imposing something upon you. But it's not saying that. It says, I can't kill you, or I can't be involved in killing you. That's what the law is saying.
Isn't it interesting that the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms declares that everyone has a right to life? It actually does not declare anywhere in the whole charter a right to die.
Well, we will all die someday.
We will.
We have a right to it or not.
Yeah, that's right. But the problem is, we're debating about
some people are naturally concerned. I mean, it's a natural concern. They're concerned about how they will die.
Yeah.
And so I'm not arguing with them about that. I recognize that there certainly are issues of what we can do for others, because nobody wants to see another person suffer greatly. But nonetheless, that's not a reason to take away the protections of the most vulnerable in our society, the protections that protect them from others who might help them cause their death against their will, or when they're at the worst time of their life and they didn't actually, when they wouldn't have even wanted it, but they were going through such a difficult time, they were succumbed to it.
And so when we're at a time when we're looking at the transfer of trillions of dollars of money from one generation to another, there are going to be people who are going to be tempted to hurry that up. And their parents need protection.
Without a question. And it's also the biggest reason why we have to become far more serious about elder abuse.
Mm.
We have to clearly recognize that there is a generation of people who are at risk. They're at risk for many reasons, but one of the big reasons they're at risk is that their children may not actually even like them. And it's not only children, it could be friends, but others are looking at them for what they have, not for who they are.
Well, they go
and
back
taking
to...
advantage of them.
Yeah.
But then there's also the physical abuse. Well, physical abuse is clearly a problem that many people are simply aggressive. They are human beings that cause these kind of problems. And so we need to protect the other from them. We need to protect people from them. We have to take this really serious, because we have an aging population, and the problem will only get worse unless we make it a top priority.
Well,
and legalizing euthanasia or assisted suicide is only going to create new avenues of abuse. That's all it's going to do.
Well, it create avenues of extermination is what we're talking
about.
The ultimate abuse.
Yeah. That's a point that needs to be stressed again and again. And when you're out here in May, I hope that we'll have a chance. Maybe we'll get a chance to have him in studio and across the microphone from the BC Civil Liberties Association.
Sounds like a date to me. Alex Schoenberg, how can people get a hold of you? You have a website?
The website is EPCC.ca, so that's Euthanasia Prevention Coalition Canada, EPCC.ca. The email is info@EPCC.ca. You can Google Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, it comes right up. And you can also go to my blog, which is alexschadenberg.blogspot.com, or just Google Alex Schadenberg. And spell it any way you want, because people spell it wrong all the time, and it seems to get there anyway.
Alex,
or you can link to my blog through the website.
And there is a link to the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition
on our website. Alex, before you go, I want to end this on a happy note. Tell our viewers about Baby Joshua. Then, what's the latest
baby
update?
Baby Joseph.
Home. Yeah,
he's home in Windsor. He's breathing on his own. Everything's fine. We have to be really thankful that Father Frank Pavone was willing to put his money where his mouth was and pay the cost of getting him into St. Louis, paying for his care in St. Louis, and when his care was complete, paying to get him back to Windsor.
Mm.
No one else had the ability or the resources or willing to spend that kind of money, because I believe he invested about $150,000 into that. The fact is that he proved a point that All this family wanted was to take their child home and care for him, and that required a child who's capable of breathing. This baby is at home, breathing on his own, not requiring medical treatment, only care of his family. What was wrong with that? Well, why did the hospital have to impose upon this family, saying to them, we are going to remove the ventilator against your consent? Why did they have to do that?
Has the hospital apologized? Has there been anything that from the hospital since the baby's return?
Well, the hospital's remarks have always been that their decision of care or their direction of care was an acceptable way to go, and that they would stand by their decision. The fact is they were trying to eliminate his life. The funny thing is about all this, when we talk about money, it was in November of last year that the family said, when the family were informed that the hospital planned to pull the ventilator, and they said, no, please don't pull the ventilator. Please do a tracheotomy so we can just bring that baby home. And so if you consider how many months where that baby was in the hospital, all the legal costs and all the wrangling that went on, that could have just been eliminated how many months earlier, and all the costs that would have been eliminated how many months earlier, just by simply doing the tracheotomy, waiting for it to heal, and let the baby go home.
Alex,
the cost would have been multiple thousands of dollars less just to do that, and it would have also recognized their right to care for their own child.
Well, what was the court decision? Because
the court said that had agreed with the hospital. The ventilator would be pulled, and the baby would die right there and then.
So this is completely consistent with the thinking that you've been talking about with the assisted suicide bill.
Yes, and this is completely why we're also involved in that Rizzulli case, because once again, the doctors thought they had the right to impose a decision like that upon baby Joseph's family, in the same way the doctors believed they had the right to pull the ventilator from Mr. Rizzulli against the family's wishes, even though Mr. Rizzulli's wife is a doctor.
Wow, Alex. Well, thank you so much. It's always good to have you here on Roadkill Radio, and just we appreciate so much all your good work.
Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you again, Alex.
Work. Yep.
Excellent.
We'll look forward to seeing you in May.
Yeah, well, we'll set that up. I'll be in touch.
Good.
Okay.
In touch soon.
Good night, Alex. Yeah. You know, I'm going to make a confession here. Don't worry, it's not that racy, people. You know, the whole issue of euthanasia prevention, there's nothing sexy about it. The whole subject matter of euthanasia is there's nothing sexy. As a matter of fact, it's sort of because I like life. So it's not even an issue that I really want to deal with. But, you know, when you start looking at how they keep banging away at this, right? And all the points that Alex raises about the vulnerable people in our society, which are increasing because we're so out of whack now in this world. You have angry daycare kids, I'd watch out, parents, you know, that are going to be taking care of their elderly parents. You know, this is an important issue that needs to be talked about more from the point of view that Alex has raised, because it is about life. It is about, you know, these children with mental health issues and suicide thoughts and all the rest of it becoming even increasingly vulnerable if this kind of...
There's a link to the abortion issue that Stephen Harper refuses to talk about, too, because a grown-up child can later, perhaps not consciously, but subconsciously think, well, you know, you killed my sibling, Mom. Well, what's wrong with me taking you out of the picture?
Yeah.
You know,
well, because life has lost a value, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's what we're dealing with. The sanctity of life, right? The preciousness of life. That our society is just, everything's disposable. You can just discard if it's not convenient. You know, kill the baby.
The Charter of Rights says everyone has a right to life. Everyone has a right to life. We're still not defending that.
No. No, it's, yeah, no, the things have got to change. We need to just rail back in government, get rid of half the bureaucrats, you know, one way or another.
The thing that makes me really angry about this assisted suicide debate is the distortion of our natural instinct of compassion Like, they appeal to us.
Yeah, but we buy into that all the time.
Poor person.
Ron,
wants to die. We buy
into that all the time. Well, what about the poor woman who's raped? You know, that's why we need abortions. What about the poor woman
does not unrape a woman.
No, it doesn't. What about the poor woman who's traumatized going into the abortion clinic? Well, that's why we need bubble zones. You know, it's just, I think what we need to do is raise the level of farmer in everybody, and everybody just becomes practical. We see things clearly, and then we'll all be better off for it.
And as Alex was saying, if we strike down this law is there to protect vulnerable people. If we strike down a law that protects vulnerable people, well, that's what we did, actually, in abortion in 1988. We had a law that protected the child in the womb.
Yeah.
And the very court that struck down that law said, Parliament has a legitimate interest in protecting the life of the unborn child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Parliament has never taken up that challenge.
Well, you know, and this is where we go back to needing leaders that will keep these courts in line, and we need judicial accountability. But that's all for another show.
Mm.